morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me is the entire troika of Democratic Perspective.
Yeah, I was thinking this this whole co-host thing was co-host.
No, he's a senior producer,
senior analyst,
super executive senior producer.
Well, these labels are important.
Yes, very important.
Gary LeMaster, Mike Cosentino here. And we are going to rant today, at least I'm going to rant over here, about debtor's prison.
Yeah, and there's been a new series in the New York Times. And, you know, sometimes we're breaking news or coming up with something that somebody's not noticed. But this is a story about the use of fines and the quadrupling of fines and the building up of fines and the effect it has on people who are already poor. And we're, in effect, returning to having debtor prisons in the country. Now, the story's been very well covered. I was provoked to start thinking about this by New York Times series, where they've documented in some great detail what happens to people. But there's NPR, right? Gary had a story on it.
Right. CNN Money has done a number. And probably the one that's done more work than anybody else is the NYU Brennan Center for Justice.
Well, we've quoted many times before.
But the idea is most of us think that we outlawed debtor's prison hundreds of years
ago.
They
were outlawed in the United States of America. To what, 200 years ago?
Because it doesn't make
sense. It is illegal to have debtors' prisons.
Put you in jail, and then you can't pay the money.
Right.
Because, well, let's say you're in jail.
Yes. But what's happened is that it's been reintroduced, kind of slid under the door, really, of debtors' prisons again. Because if you're middle class, you'll get these fines, and they seem sort of outrageous to you. They might even seem unfair, but you can pay them and get yourself out of trouble. People on the margin, people who are poor, it can send them into a spiral of increasing poverty and unemployment stuff. So what we're looking today, folks, is the unintended consequences, right, Mike, of what happens.
I don't assume that they're unintended, but you can go with that thought if you want.
I would say unintended consequences.
You're being kinder than I am.
Too severe and not thinking about the impact of what you're fines and your laws are.
We want to talk about two things. That the municipal fines send you can go to jail for, and we're going to talk about a whole host of court fees and state and municipal fines. Go to jail, but there's private debt. You can still go to jail. So there's two different things here. Because I'm going to use the F word here eventually, and that by the F word, of course, we're talking about fascism. When government and business get too close, when government allows debtors' prisons, when government allows criminal charges period, for owing money, that's called fascism.
I don't know if I agree with the fascism thing, but we have a case of in Ionia, Michigan, a 19-year-old, I guess I won't read his name. He was caught fishing out of season. It's a really terrible crime. He was sentenced to 3 days in jail for fishing out of season. I don't know what you call that.
I just want to make the point that the reason behind all of this,
please,
is federal budget cuts. When we cut, tax revenue, then we started cutting budgets. And one of the cuts was to, money to state governments.
The revenue sharing.
And when the state governments also did the same thing, they cut revenues and cut budgets. They cut the funding for counties and cities.
That's right.
And so those entities are looking for other sources of revenue. For example, in Ferguson, Missouri, that everyone's heard so much about, in 2014, they collected $2.6 million in court fines and fees
from poor people going to jail.
Mostly from poor people.
Yes.
Well, if you're going to jail, you're poor, even right. if you're rich.
We're
sorry,
not going to discuss race on this particular show because it really, well, we're going to discuss a little bit, but little you know, bit. But they're arresting twice as many black folks as they are white folks. And, the black folks have about half as likely to have any contraband in their car after they're stopped in Ferguson. So it is an aspect of it, but this is an attack really on people who don't have money, who are on the margins of society. And what we need to do is structure it so people can make their way back into society. Often what we're talking about, folks, is that jail time is not the worst problem that people face sometimes.
Right.
What the worst thing is an increasing fines and fees associated with the crime. So the jail time, you know, this guy goes to jail for 3 days for fishing out of season, but the fines begin building up. If you don't pay the fine, it get escalated. Now, this is not just Alabama where they have you can basically be indebted for life over a couple of traffic violations in Alabama, because if you can't pay the fee, then they keep jumping up the surcharges on you.
It's pretty much every state. I've got a list here of fees that and fines that are charged by various states. Arizona is one of them that charges a fee for electronic monitoring if you go to court and you're assigned
your
an ankle bracelet.
You got to pay for it. Yeah.
There's a, you know, so you pay to
right.
be. To
oh, you be, don't get it.
You rent the ankle bracelet.
That's right. You rent it.
And then there's a fee for probation and supervision. You pay for that. You pay for the cost of, you know, public defenders used to be provided free to those who couldn't afford them.
Hence the name.
Yes. Yeah. And now you are charged a fee for that.
Yeah.
You're charged for being in prison, right?
Yeah, room and board.
That's right,
yeah.
Room and board. I love that. We're going to lock you up and charge.
You know,
I'm sorry, it's not funny.
In the fees, you're charged for phone calls. You're charged for visitors. And the fees keep going up, and the fines keep going up.
The ignition interlock device that Gary is talking about is typically $100 or $200 to install.
Yeah.
And then the fees range from $70 to $100 a month, which if you're middle class is bearable, but you'll have gotten a really nice big fine along with that. But if you don't have much money, you know.
It's some of the states, Washington State's a great example. We're
going to use a working number of 44 states. There's 44 states that allow this, some level of debtor's prison.
But many of them charge interest if you can't pay the fees and the fines. Yeah. And so they put you on a payment plan, and they charge interest. In Washington State, that interest is 12% annually. So some of these people get, as Steve mentioned, get bound by debt and can never break out.
In some of the southern states, they found that, a traffic violation of a couple $100, if not paid off properly, can over your lifetime, if it was over your whole life, it would cost you $40,000.
Yeah.
We're talking about speeding. We're not talking about even DUI. We're talking about speeding.
I was reading a blog the other day that the guy said, okay, anybody charging over 10%. First of all, they should be in jail, criminal usury.
Yes,
you can. He said, "I'll let you start putting people in jail when they stop charging 19% and 29% interest. Then you can put people in jail for debt because the credit card companies. I want to also get in here that the wonks like me will say the mainstream media is not covering this, and to some degree that's true. However, I'm looking at a list of stories from NPR, from CBS, from the Wall Street Journal, from the Huffington Post, all covering in the last 5 years, doing stories on debtor's prison. And it should make you angry. It shouldn't. I'm talking pitchfork angry here. I'm talking, you gotta do something.
Nobody has pitchforks anymore, Mike.
Well, everybody's got a gun. Okay, grab your gun. There's 330 million guns in America. There's only what 360 million people. So, you know, you got to know somebody that's got 8 or 9 guns. Grab one of them and, no, I can't.
Are you a sovereign citizen?
I better not say that.
Come on now.
Come on,
Mike.
But the idea is that write a letter. That's more effective. Write a lot of letters to people saying that, you know, dead to your legislators, that you got to stop going hand in glove with business in putting people in jail for debt.
What I thought was interesting, Mike, is that since 2010, 48 states
have increased
their criminal and civil court fees. And that's very recent. That's since 2010, 48 states. So this is a fairly recent phenomenon, which I think is one reason it is getting reported. If you haven't heard about it, folks, it's because it tends to get kind of buried in reports and sub-stories of sub-stories.
And again, the reason for that in 2010 was because of the Great Recession and the federal cuts to the state budgets.
Had the impact by then.
And then, you know, passing that on down the line.
Well, that's it. We all know stories, and certainly I know. I have a friend that worked here in Sedona. This is a guy that doesn't drink. He got in an argument with his wife, had a couple of beers. On the way home, he gets stopped. And we all know now that a DUI was so they took his license away. We're talking the thousands he had to pay for the DUI. He owed the court something like $1,100.
Yeah, it's usually about $2,000 if you get caught for DUI.
And when he lost his job.
Bail can be $185 to $5,000.
So now he's trying to get to Sedona every day for his job without a license. He's trying to pay off the fines on this $9 an hour job that he has in Sedona. His wife has a job in Sedona and loses it because they're struggling trying to get both of them to work. With one car and her license, and it's just a spiral downward.
I got to admit, Mike, when I first saw all the arrests for driving with a suspended license, I said, what are these guys doing? I mean, you get a suspended license, you don't drive. And I thought, well, if you have a suspended driver's license in Arizona, you are truly in a very bad situation, Joey.
Exactly. Well, see, I thought they used
to. You have to drive.
I kept telling, go back to the court. They have to let you drive to work. And apparently he said they don't. Now, that's a big change. I thought they said they can suspend your license.
I believe that you could get an exception for driving to and from work.
That's what I thought.
In some states, at least.
I don't know about Arizona, but I know that there is the there is exception in some states. But you have to know to go and ask
that's
for
right.
it.
That's
and
right.
And the problem is that we have people who don't know how the system works, who are intimidated by the system, and who are not really clear about their rights.
Well, he was so ashamed of this. This was happening for 2 years before I knew what was going on.
And there is shame attached to it. I mean, you get DUI, you know, you've been driving drunk. And
I was giving them lots of rights. Why am I giving you so many rights to work?
And so often these people end up in jail because, you know, not in this case apparently, but if you get caught and you have no choice but to drive anyway to go to work, either that or you can't afford to put money, you know, food on the table, then you... You drive again. Now you get caught for driving with a suspended license, and you either get a much higher fee.
And that happened to him.
Or you go to jail.
It wasn't for a wife and child, he would have been in jail. The judge talked about jail, but because of his wife and child.
The fee I'm reading for Arizona DUI is about $1,600. That's just not the court cost, or it could be up to another $1,500 for the second time. What that guy was facing was a fine of $4,000. Third offense is $10,000. These are amounts of money that people don't have. I think psychologically, when you don't have money, it's very hard to... People say, why are the poor spending their money so irresponsibly? But when you don't have anything, it's very hard. The whole idea of saving... You're barely able to scrape by, and you're supposed to save a bunch of money. I There are people who can do it, folks. I know there are people who can do this, but there's few and far between because you're giving up what everybody else around you seems to have.
If you're on a minimum wage job, what is that in Arizona? It's like $7.50 an
Something
hour.
Something like that, yeah.
And now you get caught for speeding and you have a $100 fine that you're already probably on food stamps and struggling to make ends meet. Now you take $100 out of 1 month's budget. Where is it going to come from? You can't eat. You know?
So what we're really talking about is the way the fines disproportionately impact the poor.
Right.
In other words, what's in society's interest is to get the poor folks, to help them or encourage them to be as functional in society as possible, to get along as well as they possibly can, and to give them a helping hand. But the process of all these fines, and there are many aspects. We're just talking about one aspect of it today, folks. It's a huge thing. The aspect of it is it's counterproductive. It's sending people into worse poverty. It's making them into criminals. The process of criminalizing and charging them so much from stuff is making them worse than they would be otherwise.
It's not about public safety. It's about money. You know, it's trying to generate more money for the city or county or whatever the entity may be.
Yeah, it's paying a huge. I think what Gary or Mike said is correct. The Great Recession. They decide to pay for court costs by this. So I don't know how does this work. You know, if somebody leaves jail for 30 days having to pay for being in jail, which I just don't know. You know, society, being in jail is something society decides that you have to do. I don't see paying.
Well, we've done shows on mass incarceration, and this is part of it. In the United States, how do you get 2.2 million Americans in jail? One of the ways, besides marijuana laws, are fines. And jailing people for not A, paying their fines, and B, paying their debts. I want to make it clear that we have both things going on. It's not just municipalities and counties that are jailing people because they can't pay fines or they can't pay costs. They go on a payment system, as Gary pointed out, and they miss a payment and then are hauled into court and threatened with jail. It's a very effective.
Sometimes taken immediately to jail.
Sometimes taken.
Jail, you miss,
exactly.
You pay it for 5 years and you miss one. You're in trouble.
Well, but it's the same thing with private debt. You can, if you're brought to court for missing medical payments, if they send you to collection, you can be, and this is the scary part. My friends, I'm just afraid of. I mean, the ACLU has done some wonderful work on this, and state by state, I think I was making some progress with regulation. And the answer to this, I'm not afraid to say, is regulation. These guys got to be regulated. The municipalities, the counties, the states have got to be regulated on collecting all their costs from the poor people that are going to jail. And not just poor people, by the way. I'm consider myself, I guess, sort of middle class. But you give me some of these debts, some of these fines, and it's going to have a real negative impact on my life. It's certainly going to affect my drinking.
And a lot of this is just flat out illegal on the part of the county and municipal courts. They're in many cases going against Supreme Court rulings that outlaw, you know, as you mentioned before, debtors' prisons were long ago outlawed. We used to put people in stocks and pelt them with rotten vegetables, you know, and because they couldn't pay their fines. And so long ago that was outlawed, but a lot of these municipal courts are breaking the law. And in Ferguson, for example, they documented one municipal court in either Ferguson or a nearby suburb that
Jennings,
had
maybe
had such large number of people been given tickets and fines that they would be, you know, forced to appear in court. The the court couldn't handle the 500 or so people that would show up that day. So after 5 minutes, they would close the doors of the court building because they were full up. The people who couldn't get in would go away, and then they would have a warrant issued for their arrest because they didn't show up in court.
There was another municipality that did suspended licenses in batches of 10, bring 10 guys in at a time. And
wow.
Yeah.
The ACLU has an article called The Outskirts of Hope, How Ohio's Debtors' Prisons are ruining lives and costing communities. And The Outskirts of Hope was a quote from Lyndon Johnson. He talked about people living on the outskirts of hope in our country. And I believe that in 2015, there are plenty of people who live on the outskirts of hope. And debtors' prison and being faced, threatened with jail because of fines or because of medical deaths is definitely pushing a lot of people to the outskirts of hope.
I think we all found some just horrendous examples when we were doing research for this.
Yes.
There's a couple of them I'd like to point out,
and
then you guys can add on yours.
Stories are terrible and great at the same time.
You know, here's one that a young woman who I think was around 30 years old was fined $2,000. She had $2,000 in fines and fees. She was in the process of, during that period of time, of giving birth. 2 weeks after she gave birth, she was, you know, under a doctor's care because of complications. She was arrested because a warrant had been issued and taken to prison for not, you know, failure to pay the fines. And even when she told them that she, you know, and had her doctor tell them that she was under, you know, home care,
right.
They didn't care. She was in prison anyway. Yeah. There's my you know, favorite or worst was the a CNN article documented a woman in Texas who was caring for her dying father. She spent a month, you know, away from home to take care of her father who was dying. During that time, she had some relatives taking care of her house. She had two dogs at home. The relatives let the, not knowing the local city ordinances, let the dogs out to play. It just so happened that the dog catcher was in the area, saw them out without a leash, you know, took the dogs away. The woman arrives home at the end of the month. Her dogs had been euthanized because, you know, she had been fined. You know, they delivered fines, and she hadn't known about it. And even if she had, she couldn't afford to pay it. And so she arrives home. She got two dead dogs. She has $1,200 in fines facing her, more than $1,200. And she has warrants out for her arrest. And she had already been trying to deal with, the reason she couldn't afford to pay any of this was she had been dealing with fibromyalgia and had medical costs that were, you know, insurmountable for her.
What do you guys know about this? The companies that part of this whole that's driving this are companies are buying collections of bad debts. You know, groups of putting bad debt together, buying it, and then collecting it at any cost. So, in other words, we have people specializing in taking bad debt, taking debts that haven't been collected, and then hiring people to prosecute and to go after these poor. I'm trying not to use foul language.
I had got repeated calls for somebody looking for Clarence, with my last name, Williamson. Over and over again, and I told them, there is no Clarence Williamson here. As far as I know, there has never, ever been a Clarence Williamson. And it went on about 20 times.
I've had that too.
And I finally said to them, look, if you call me one more time, I'm going to file a complaint against you. Who are you? What is your address? What is your telephone number? Who do you work for? And that finally stopped it. But it was really purely harassment. They were looking for somebody who had never lived in that address, because I know the people who we we got the house from, and there was nobody ever there with that name, but they called over and over again. You had it too, Gary?
Yeah, they just pick out, you know, I have a fairly unusual last name, and they assumed they were looking for a Frank LeMaster, and they saw the only LeMaster in the phone book in the Twin Cities and called me and started harassing me, trying to get me to tell them where Frank was, who I didn't know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, trying to get me to pay his fees. Yeah. And fines. And after a few of those calls, I did the same thing. I threatened them with legal
action. You owe blah, blah.
Yeah.
So pleasant. Debt collectors are really pleasant.
Yeah, they're nice guys. It's a profession that attracts sweethearts and kindly guys.
Yes, my wife passed away, as we all know in this room. And I got calls for debts that I paid. You know, in other words, I paid off, you know, three or four of her credit cards, and I got calls for debts that I had paid to try to collect them again. And that made me really, you talk about angry.
Yeah.
Actually, I was sadder than angry, but for about 2 years after she died, I got calls trying to collect credit card debt that I had paid.
And that's coming on her death. That makes it much worse.
Exactly.
I think the thing is that sliding under the door is this process of fines building up and becoming almost a debtor's prison. And in many states, do you have a statistic on the number of states that have this? It's most states, right, Gary?
Well, I've got it kind of goes by, I have it broken down by what the fees are. For example, in 43 states in the District of Columbia, defendants can be billed for a public defender that taxpayers are already paying for, but the city or municipal court turns around and charges the person who can't afford an attorney to begin with,
charges them for a public defender.
In 41 states, inmates can be charged room and board for jail and prison stays. In at least 44 states, offenders can get billed for their own probation and parole supervision. In all 50 states except for Hawaii and the District of Columbia, so in 49 states, there's a fee for the electronic monitoring devices, the ankle bracelets, that these people, of course, want to wear. You know, they're so fashionable. In many cases, I don't have a number for the states, but in many cases, defendants and offenders pay for their own arrest warrants. they pay for court-ordered drug and alcohol abuse treatment. They pay to have DNA samples collected. They're billed when courts need to modernize their computers. So they attach a fee just for computers for the courts to the fines. And in many cases, it's broken out, and in many cases, not. And as in Washington State, they even get charged a fee for a jury trial. And you have a choice between a 6-person jury or a 12-person jury, and the difference between the two is $250. So if you want, you know, if you want a full jury trial, it costs you more. And then they add on fees for the cost of running the courthouse, the salaries of the court employees, the heat and air conditioning for the courthouse, the cost of the court's telephones, copy machines, even the cost to underwrite underwriting the county employees' fitness gym.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all add-ons to the traffic fines or DUI or whatever.
I guess it's a little off subject, but they've been privatizing telephone calls from prisons, and so it can cost you 10, 15 times as much to make your telephone call from prison as it does from anywhere else ever. It's just, it's a giant, I guess, I don't know if it's reached $1 billion, but it's close to an industry of a series of private companies that have taken over prisoner telephone calls and are making a killing on it.
In Arizona, the federal and state prisons charge you, I don't know about federal, the state does, they charge you to register visitors. So if, right. if your family members want to come visit you, they're limited to once a month.
They charge you for extra visits from your lawyer. That's what scared
right,
me.
Right.
Supposedly, your lawyer should be free. But if he comes more than they think he should or she should, then they charge you for that. We don't want to do a debt show without talking about school debt, education debt, and medical debt. The two biggest debts that people face. If we're talking about debt, we're talking about massive school loan debt, and the once again, people, companies buying them and then trying to collect, and any by any means possible, and our medical debt. Now, who in this room knows whether Obamacare, whether the ACA, has mitigated or at least softened hospitals and the ability of companies, for-profit medical companies, to put you in jail for medical debt. Before ACA, I know there was lots of it. Now, I haven't heard so much about it lately.
I don't think so. I mean, basically, ACA covers your medical expenses pretty much. I mean, you have a lot of the plans that are inexpensive, and some of them are very inexpensive, particularly if you're a younger person rather than an older person, have a high threshold before the plan starts paying it. But the way that ACA, the Obamacare, is structured, there are none of the limits that used to catch people, Mike.
I see.
The limits would be there. There used to be a hidden, or not hidden, but a fine print limit to the amount of the insurance company would have to pay a year, a lifetime, and it would sound high to people. Oh my gosh, you know, over $100,000. Then they won't pay anymore. But if you have any really serious, if you're in an accident, if you have a serious illness, as you go right through these limits immediately. There's also ACA, sort of what it did was a standardized stuff. So all the plans are similar. If you read what one covers, you read what the other covers. The big difference is the convenience of the companies, whether doctors are in the service or the amount of a threshold that you have to pay.
The cost, one of the downsides is the cost varies for insurance from state to state, depending on whether or not you're using the federal exchange or if you're using the state exchange. Some of the states have negotiated with insurance companies far more toughly or better rates than others. So you'll see some variance.
So I don't think there's, I think once you're, you know, everybody, you know, we don't like Obamacare, but once you're on Obamacare, you're basically safe from any kind of medical debt.
Well, they used to do things like my mother got caught with this prior to the ACA. She had a health insurance policy and she'd been paying on it for a couple of years. The payments were inexpensive. And then she had a medical problem that wasn't even a huge one, but it was going to cost more to for the medical, you know, payments or the cost of the care than it was what she had paid for the premiums already. So the insurance company just refunded the premiums that she had paid and stuck her with the cost of the care.
The ACA really made it so that you can't do a lot of the really sneaky stuff that was going on with medical insurance.
So that's probably the reason, because for a while there, it was really bad.
Really? I never heard of that. Actually, what I did hear was that somebody was talking to a German fellow, and they said, well, what percentage of the people go into debt in Germany for medical bills? Because here it's the largest cause of going into deep debt. And he said, nobody.
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah,
it's covered.
It's a joke.
Nobody.
Even with the ACA, there are still going to be people going into bankruptcy for medical costs because their insurance isn't going to cover the entire cost. If they have a catastrophic illness, there's still going to be some bills that are not going to be fully paid.
There's no caps on the yearly or lifetime averages. So the thing was, people would say, well, you know, I got this really high lifetime average. But if you've got leukemia, you know, you're through it in months. And so, the thing that the ACA did that nobody talks about or they don't talk about much is it regularized what is covered so that you can't have a lot of finagling. If you buy from that program, they all cover the same stuff. It covers your pre-existing conditions. The other thing was that you couldn't get insurance. But I think that's a little bit different than what we're talking about when we're talking about municipalities and state governments and counties going beyond. Now, none of us wants guys who are drinking and driving on the road much, right? We don't. But there has to be ways that are not counterproductive to do that. There has to be things that people can afford that won't throw them into deeper into debt. And when you cost somebody their job, you disrupt a family. And all you're doing is creating more problems down the line. You're punishing somebody for their crime, but you're just creating more problems.
One way to solve it is to follow the lead of Colorado. The governor of Colorado signed a law that tells judges they can't send people to jail simply because they're too poor to pay their fines and fees. And that only came after ACLU had challenged the practice of courts in three different Colorado cities.
Now, Ferguson is in the St. Louis metropolitan area. But St. Louis, the city, has a program that allows you to deduct jail time from your fine, right? And some of the other areas in the St. Louis area have programs that remediate your fines based on poverty and so forth and so on. So it's not all, you know, Ferguson is there, but they're also, for example, you still end up with a huge fine, but in Jennings, which is nearby, and they let you pay off the fine at $100 a month. So you're not accumulating debt on top of a debt. You're not getting compound interest on a fine. I mean,
in one way, as I mentioned earlier, one way to solve this is to elect people in public office that are not adverse to raising revenue for the state or city or county or federal government. As we've talked before, if you run a business, you don't just look at the expense, line, you look at the income line. And we continue to cut taxes and cut taxes nationally and the state, and all that does is drive the cost down to the local level.
I think that's exactly right.
So
there,
if you want to solve this problem, elect people who will look at the budget from both a revenue line and an expense line.
So people's incomes have been stagnant. Most people's incomes have been stagnant for a long time. And people don't have enough money. And then they cut government back in order to have more money. And then what that does is disproportionately punish anybody who makes a mistake. And that's what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So you make a mistake, you get caught speeding, you're punished not only for the crime, you're punished because they want to make some money off of you.
Well, that's it. Most states have the U.S. Constitution, most state constitutions have laws, have articles against debtor's prison. So as you guys have intimated here, the courts and the counties are doing this in spite of the existing laws. And it is already against the law in many places, but they're doing it anyway. And it takes organizations like the ACLU did in Colorado, and like they need to keep doing, which is kind of sad, nationwide, in other words, to sue and force those entities to not prosecute, to not put people in jail because of debt, because there's already existing laws, because their constitutions say that they can't.
Keep in mind, these things don't just affect, you know, a lot of middle class and wealthy people want to, you know, write these people off as deadbeats.
Right.
As we've talked about,
most
of these people have jobs. They work hard. Some of them have multiple jobs. They're struggling to make ends meet because of minimum wage.
The working poor is not just a term in the in this area in the United States. For sure,
working poor is working and poor, and that's more and more common now.
And we should be sympathetic to those.
And the Democrats' platform for 2016 is going to be $12 an hour minimum wage. Now it should be 14 or 15, but I think I'm starting to see a lot of signs in political writing that they're going to go for $12 an hour. $12 minimum wage, which is great. I mean, at least at $12 an hour, if you're working 40 hours a week, you can pay rent. You're not going to have a great life, but you can be at least in northern Arizona, you're going to be able to pay your rent and probably have something to eat. You might not be driving anything. You're going to be taking the Lynx bus between Sedona and Cottonwood. But you will be able to afford a place to live and food to eat.
I think there's too much talk about minimum wage. I think we should be talking about living wage.
There you go.
I'm old-fashioned. I believe if you take a full-time job and work hard at it, that you should be able to support yourself without public assistance.
That doesn't make you old-fashioned. It makes you a socialist.
Yeah.
You think people should be paid.
Commie tendency.
I thought that was capitalism.
No, capitalism is you get your labor for as cheap as you can. You don't give a fat rat's behind.
No,
capitalism
not,
is you pay guys as little as you can.
Yeah,
and get by with it unless government comes along and says, oh, you can't pay people.
You're leaving off the descriptor of that form of capitalism. That's called vulture capitalism.
Oh,
that's not capitalism.
Oh, that sounds
per se.
Gary. That sounds very bad.
Well,
I don't think we're in favor of vulture capitalism.
I saw a thing on Facebook the other day posted by a friend of mine who owns one of the local wine businesses. He said something about that people would be in favor of capitalism if they ever experienced it.
That's great.
Which was great. Yeah, I have to admit.
We only have a few minutes left. What's going on with our sponsors?
We just want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks and Democrats of the Verde Valley for their support for our program. Democrats of the Red Rock, and I don't have the timing yet for it, is having an evening program, I think, this month. And then they're going back to breakfast in
the latest thing I remember.
In April or May, you're talking.
Yeah.
Is May 20th, I believe.
May 20th.
Okay.
But it's an evening program, and it's a number of state senators, Gary.
How
exciting. and political strategists.
Okay.
It's going to be at the Jewish
Community
Center in Sedona. And it's May 20th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And it's described as a panel of hardworking Democratic legislators and election strategists.
Well, if you're a Democratic legislator in Arizona, you got to be hardworking.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get used to being ignored. But anyway,
these panels are very interesting.
They are.
The last one was
very
just great.
Good.
Lots of interaction among the panelists and stuff makes for a really interesting time.
And there were a number of reasonable people in the audience, which we certainly hope to have again, I guess.
No. And Mike and I were kind of running that one, or at least moderating that one. And there was a Tea Party guy, and so I got the Tea Party question because all the questions, I read it out. Why not?
And I should point out that this event is free.
Free. Yeah. That's right. There may even be refreshments if you play your cards.
Yeah, there probably will be refreshments.
All right. So we got we have the movie at the Sedona Library, sponsored by Democrats of the Red Rocks every month. If you're some really interesting documentaries. We have the evening program in May. So no breakfast in May, as far as
no breakfast.
Okay.
No breakfast.
All right.
So we'll go hungry for a month.
Yeah. No, there's lots of we have many shows coming up. We are going to broadcast throughout the summer.
Yes.
We are available online, by the way. You can listen to us on your computer. There's not a lot of liberal talk radio, but we are trying to attempt, the Democratic perspective attempts to balance the scale. You can pick this up and other podcasts on our website. You can pick up Gary's great summaries at vvid.org, vvid.org. You can listen to all our fine shows.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.